We're back. This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and that was Papa Wemba, by the way, and Show Me the Way. And great, important performer, had great influence throughout Africa. And joining us now is Robin Philpott, and we want to talk about Jane Jacobs, and we're going to also talk about the case of Leon Mugesera. He just received a life sentence in Rwanda, and Robin has written about the issue of Rwanda, has a great book. Are you there, Robin?
Hi, Phil. How are you doing?
Very well, and it's,
nice,
we're glad
nice
to
hear
be talking
Papa
to
Wemba.
You.
That's nice.
Jane Jacobs is a definitely, she's reached kind of an iconic figure. She's this is 2016, the 100th anniversary of her birth, and a new book has been brought out. And it features the last interview with Jane Jacobs, and that interview was one done by none other than yourself, Robin Philpott.
Right.
Tell us about the book. Where is it available and that kind of thing, and then we want to ask you some questions.
Well, it's also the 10th anniversary of her death. She passed away 10 years ago today in Toronto. The book that came out, they have this series of last interviews of literary people, people who've written books and who had an influence on the world. Among them, others, there was Hannah Arendt, there was Hemingway, there is Kurt Vonnegut Jr., and the latest installment in this series put out by Melville House Press in New York City is the last interview with Jane Jacobs. It's called The Last Interview and Other Conversations, and there are four interviews in it. 1962, when she first her book on the American cities, The Life and Death of Great American Cities.
Mm-hmm.
The death, I think it's The Death and Life, sorry.
Death and Life. I always thought that was the interesting construction.
Right. And then another one from 1978, another one from early 2000, and then her last interview, which she graciously granted to me a year before she passed away, and the only reason she agreed to was it was going to be about her least known book, and that is The Question of Separatism, Quebec and the Struggle Over Sovereignty Association. So she granted me almost a three-hour interview in her home on Albany Street, in the U of T area.
Mm-hmm.
So Melville House approached me to get this interview because it did appear in the book. We re-edited and republished. We brought out that book a second time in 2011 and ran the interview. And so they decided it was important. So it's nice to know. Mm-hmm. That interview is now being read because it's her position on Quebec, on Canada, because it's a book on Canada, really,
mm-hmm.
Is probably the position that is least known and the least appreciated, particularly in Canada.
Well, welcome to the two solitudes.
Yeah.
I mean really, it's inescapable. It's like we're tied to an anchor. And no matter how hard people fly and flap their wings and noises they make, we come back to this point.
Yeah, here's a world-class thinker who...
the obvious.
She also said, well, listen, and she wrote about Canada for Canadians, saying, listen, you know, you've got to try and work something out with Quebec, and here's the solution. It's in their interest, and it's in your interest.
By the way, it fit her theory of cities.
Right, exactly.
Montreal, Toronto.
Yeah. Based on her understanding of cities and economics, she came to the conclusion that it would be better for both Toronto and Montreal and the nations they drive, because her vision is that cities drive nations and nations' economies, would benefit from a different relationship, one which would involve much greater autonomy, including sovereignty for Quebec. And they said that would be helpful for Toronto as well, and Toronto and the rest of the nation that Toronto drives. And they said And she wrote this, and then she reiterated it to me in 2005 in this interview, that otherwise Montreal and Quebec will become satellite economies to Toronto. Mm-hmm. And that's not in the interest. She described the relationship between Toronto and Montreal as that of empire. An empire relationship is not good for anybody, even the heart of the empire. It's not good in the long term.
Yes.
For their own economy. Brilliant thinker, and she in that interview she approached a lot of different questions as well, including. I mean, she started this book she did was about Canada, Montreal, Toronto. She went into depth into discuss Norway and Sweden, which were one country. It was all Sweden up until 1905, and how they reached an amiable divorce, even though it was very tense. But now both economies have benefited from that. And so she invited Canadians, and the powers that be in English Canada were just not interested in even discussing it with her.
Yeah. Well, but by the way, I should say, thanks to your efforts, even Quebecers came to be aware of her views. I don't think they were very tuned into what she was thinking or saying either, were they?
A select few had followed her closely and appreciated her, but for reasons that I never understood, the book was never available in French, and it did come out following that interview. It did come out in French, but then for some obscure reason, it was pulled because of a problem with the translation, but it was
Jane Jacobs, one of the great thinkers and innovators, and her thought, probably more than any others in her field, truly had an impact. And yet, we're talking about the fumbling of publications, and by the way, you're conversant with her thoughts and her writings. I'm sure most of our listeners have not seen these books, even though they are available in English now. And by the way, that book, I have to make sure I'm clear about it. The book itself, is that now available?
Yeah.
Or is it, I know, because you wrote about her.
Thanks to Baraka Books, because we realized that the book she wrote seven books. I read all her books. And the six other books have constantly been in print from when they were written. You know, if you look on Amazon, you'll see that The Death and Life of Great American Cities and so on, all their books are in regular sellers. But the only one that was not available was the book about Canada and Quebec. And so we approached the people who held the rights. In fact, it was the estate, and obtained the rights to publish it in English. So it's available now at Baraka Books. Mm-hmm. It's since 2011, with the interview that has now come out in this series of the New York publishing house, Melville House.
Mm-hmm.
So the book is available, but just to give you an example, when she passed away 10 years ago today, the day after, the Globe and Mail ran an obituary. And they talked about her bibliography, her writing career, because she considered herself primarily a writer. And they put down that she had six books. They omitted to say that she wrote the book, Question of Separatism. The New York Times, of course, ran all that she had written seven books, but the Globe and Mail decided to censor that.
That is because we're talking about serious psychological problems.
Right. No.
Or DNA matters. I don't know.
Yeah.
By the way, I would just say to our listeners, you better avail yourself of that book. If it has that kind of – if it gives Anglo-Canadian media migraines to think about it, you better read the book. I don't know what else I could say.
Yeah, it is worth thinking. I mean, people might not agree with it or might not like it.
Well, most people want to read a banned book. It's awfully close to being banned when the Globe doesn't even mention it in an obituary, and it's a book about Canada.
It's her only book about Canada.
And you'd say, well, surely you'd put that at the top.
Yeah.
You'd say, well, there were seven books, and there was this one. No. We're speaking to Robin Philpott.
It was instrumental in her development of her thoughts, because the next book she wrote, which fleetingly mentions Canada, it's called Cities and the Wealth of Nations. Mm-hmm. And I'm convinced that she wrote that in 84, which deals with all these questions about how nations' economies operate. And she couldn't have written that without having done the book she did on Canada and Quebec. But it's people just decide we're not going to talk about it.
And by the way, what's the title of the book?
It's called The Question of Separatism, mm-hmm. Quebec and the Struggle over Sovereignty.
And that's the full title, The Question of Separatism and... Well, then now I've forgotten the rest of it, but...
The Question of Separatism, Quebec and the Struggle over Sovereignty.
Uh-huh.
And when we put it out in 2011, we sent out massive emails to announce that it had become available, and including to an illustrious historian based in Toronto, Jack Granitstein, and he wrote back and said, "Why reprint? It's a dreadful book." Her words.
You know, by the way, I mean, there are many authors who want to make sure that they're so happy to be attacked by certain people that they will put those negative attacks on the book, saying, all the people know that character. I want to read my book. And this would be one of those instances. We're speaking to Robin Philpott, he is the editor at Baraka Books. And she made a couple of observations. Before we get to our second subject, I want to make sure I ask you. She said had something to say about the tar sands. She had something to say about the euro. What did she say about these
in that
matters?
Interview, it was a broad range. We covered a lot of subjects. The tar sands, she said, and this was in 2005, she said, it's a losing proposition. She said, the law of diminishing return says you can't invest that much money just to produce something. It's going to be replaced. There are going to be other sources of energy. And she was saying this is one of these grand Canadian natural resources schemes where you just sort of pump out your natural resources. It's a long way from economic development. And she said it's not going to work. And 10 years later down the line, we could tell that.
We're looking at something right in the eye.
Yeah. And then about the euro, mm-hmm. it was 2005, there was a referendum, for instance, in France about whether to, about the European, belonging to the Europe. And she said, well, it's a difficult question, but the euro is a mistake, she said. It's a mistake. He said, the Europe had a great thing going with their national currencies. It gives them a certain amount of economic power to be able to devaluate. And she even mentioned Greece at that time and said, what's going to happen is it's all going to be determined by Frankfurt in Germany. Mm-hmm. And the other people are going to be left hanging there where their money is over-evaluated. In other words, and it's going to cost them, the poorer countries are going to be suffering terribly. She predicted this problem, which right now is totally plaguing Europe because they know national governments no longer have any control over their economy.
Mm-hmm.
It was far-reaching, her vision. And
that last interview that you captured.
Yeah. And, I think it was a good interview. And as I said, she only agreed to do the interview because she was 88 at the time, and mm-hmm. she was working on a number of other things, and she didn't want to lose her concentration. The only reason she agreed to do it was because it was about Quebec. And when I asked her, I said, "Are people journalists who consulted her all the time, interviewed her over all kinds of subjects?" I said, "They must ask you about Quebec," and she hesitated, and then she said, "No, you're the first."
People better get this book. Now, tell us again the title of the one that is just now published. It's called, what is it?
It's called Jane Jacobs, The Last Interview and Other Conversations. And You can pick it up at all the bookstores. I saw it there on the weekend that it was available now. And in Toronto bookstores, I found them in Montreal as well. So it's Melville House Press, and it's, you know, quite a, and it's distributed by Random House and Penguin, which is, it's quite the irony that the story comes out featuring her interview on Quebec, not in Toronto, but in New York City.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for that, talking about Jenny Jacobs. Now, I have to ask you, and I should remind our listeners, this is Robin Philpott. He's the author of a very important book titled Rwanda, The New Scramble for Africa. And it's been praised by Ed Herman and many others because it takes on a topic which is involved Canadians, Romeo Dallaire, and it was a war and great loss of human life and massacres of civilians, etc. And it's been argued about to this day and will certainly be for decades into the future. But one of the personalities that has always comes up in discussion of the events of 1994 Rwanda, April through July, basically, is Leon Mugesera, who was a university professor, a linguist. He was educated at, I think, Laval University. And in 1994, he was cited by many people as a perfect example of someone who had called for genocide and for the tax on the Tutsi minority of Rwanda. And it turned into, he was living at that time in Quebec.
Yeah.
Tell us about this case, because he's just recently, he was, of course, after years of legal struggles, he was removed to Rwanda. Then he was put on trial, given a life sentence about 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
To my mind, it's a case of political hysteria because there are certain anomalies. First of all, the speech that everyone cited, that was given in 1992. The events we're talking about, that the war and massacre, took place in 1994. Let me just focus on one question. It was always said from the beginning, and it's to this day reported in our media, that Leon Mugesera called for the murder of Tutsis and for throwing their bodies into the rivers of Rwanda. Is that – you've seen the speech. As a matter of fact, you were one of the witnesses at one of the first inquiries about this. What's the truth?
Well, the truth is that the man is innocent. He never said that. And it's not just me who's saying it or his lawyer. In 2003, his case was brought to the Federal Court of Appeal. And three judges were brought to study the substance and study what happened exactly. They were convinced that it was important to go back and see what really happened. And they produced a ruling in January 2003, 136 pages, where they go through in detail what happened. And they concluded unequivocally that the man was innocent, that his speech was, and they got, there were witnesses in there who were real analysts of speech and hate speech as well. This guy, Marc Angenot, is known internationally. He's for analyzing all kinds of hate speech, Hitler's speeches as well. And he'd witnessed to it and just said, there's just no ground here. He pointed out that this man was talking about democracy, peace, and love, and elections.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the words that somebody present would retain.
Mm-hmm.
In that, and they also then the source of the.
But by the and it's just on the very specifically. He didn't. I read the speech recently. I read the judgment you were talking about. He did not use the word Tutsi.
Not once.
So why did our media use that word?
Because they've been, it's one of these magic tricks where they turn what he was talking about is the invasion of Rwanda, the war that was since October 1st, 1990. He was speaking November 22nd, 1992, and he was talking about the invading forces. Not once did he talk about the Tutsis. Yeah. And he was just saying that these invading forces had to be pushed back. Mm-hmm. And it was people were justified in fighting it. Yes. And it was in the name of democracy and justice, yes, and peace that they were he was standing up.
Well, that speech calls for people to, in the concluding paragraphs, he says, "What the reason we're here is I want you to vote."
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Doesn't convey what ordinary Canadians think they know. They've seen three or four words. By the way, there are words in the speech which are, you could say, well, that's kind of strong language, but it's not talking about a group.
Yeah.
He's talking about an armed struggle that's going on in his country.
Right.
And by the way, they tried to make him responsible for a plan to do what occurred in 94 when he says, I don't understand. He recently told the Rwanda court, how you can say I was part of a plan since the government was investigating me for giving that speech.
Right, exactly. And but they also this judgment this these judges looked at the origins of the speech, because nobody ever had a real full case of this cassette. Nobody ever had recorded it. People had recorded bits of it.
Yeah, incidentally, let me just get your comment on this quickly. I'm sorry. But the experts had told them that there were, as a result of his speech, it was played on the radio, and that people were killed in the region in the days following. The court said what about that?
The court said no. And the court said, and the judges looked at all and said, we're just impressed by the lack of impact that speech had. There were 65 publications in Rwanda at the time, and there were only three pro-RPF publications that talked about it. The national radio mentioned it, but just dismissed it as being unimportant. And most of the people
mentioned it, did not play the speech.
They did not play the speech until 1994. And then right now in court, they're trying to say he was guilty because excerpts of his speech were played in 1994. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the judges pointed out, is I think he was citing Napoleon, he said, give me one line of any speech and I can hang somebody for it.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you cannot excerpt as you like, mm-hmm, from a speech. You cannot say that, and it's totally dishonest. And the origins of the speech, which were brought to attention internationally, was this commission of investigation on human rights violations, which, mm-hmm, turned out to be totally infiltrated or present.
I would use the word biased. I read judge said they found Alison DeForge, who was the leader of that group, to be not credible because she acknowledged that she couldn't be sure about these things because she said she didn't have time. She was trying to urgently produce something that would influence media.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know what you're supposed to make of an expert talks like that.
That's not justice. That's not justice.
No, that's not proper investigation. If you said,
no.
And she did, they quote her as saying she was in a hurry because they wanted to both lobby and they wanted to influence media. That's exactly what she said.
Yeah, and she also admitted in front of the court that the speech had no impact as regards violence to people. There was none.
Yeah.
As a result of the speech.
Well, it's a
She was brought to say that in court.
Yeah, it's a sorry story because the man has received a life sentence and everybody thinks that's just fine. And they also think they believe in free speech and also taking care with evidence. Robin Philpott, we're very appreciative of all the information you gave us. We really look forward to reading that book. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks for calling, Phil.
Okay,
thanks. Bye-bye.
This is CIUT, and I want to thank Hanny and Charlotte for doing a great job, and we'll see you next week.